read this phrase one more time. I'll stop my video so you can see the image. In the pasture of the world, I endlessly push aside the tall grasses in search of the bull. Following unnamed rivers, lost upon the interpenetrating paths of distant mountains, my strength failing and my vitality exhausted, I cannot find the bull. I only hear the locusts chirping through the forest at night. So our last evening of holding this image and this picture together as we begin this ox herding journey. And this image and this verse of we can look at it really as a sense of seeking happiness, seeking peace, seeking ease that I spoke about 2 weeks ago at the beginning of the month. We also last week we talked about the relative and absolute, and we'll play with that in this little recap. But just reflecting on the situation in the Ukraine and how, you know, the aggressors, there's this seeking happiness, seeking some kind of fulfillment through power, through control, through expanding boundaries. And, you know, from our perspective, you can see, you know, easily that this is fruitless. It does not lead to happiness in the long term or even the short term, and causes tremendous suffering. And of course, there's the people who are, you know, on the ground dealing with the fear of violence, of death, of losing their homes. And there's the relative trying to find a relative place of happiness, of ease, or some escape. And so this play of relative and absolute, I think it's reflecting on just the situation there. As I was meditating, I could just, you know, feel it really much centered in my heart as I was practicing. When we start to come into our hearts, we start to orient and start to notice the suffering in ourselves and others. And this takes us right into the middle of that first noble truth, the noble truth of dukkha. And that becomes the launching pad for our practice, launching pad from the early teachings into the Four Noble Truths. And these ox herding pictures, this first picture shows us the state of suffering, this being lost, bewildered, searching this way and that way for some escape, some sense of happiness. So it can, as most good metaphors can take a very, you know, mundane or practical approach to our everyday lives and how we live our lives. It can also go to the divine and to the spiritual. And this is, you know, the ultimate point of these pictures, but they both resonate. And so last week I talked about this contrast between relative and absolute realities, relative and absolute ways of practicing. And the importance of that is to realize that sometimes what's needed is really a relative approach. We need to relatively find a way through our immediate suffering, our immediate difficulty. Something as simple as shifting your posture. If you're just, your legs are just killing you, your back's killing you, and that's the only thing that you can think about, there's a relative shift around that. The relative shifts around our, maybe some of our work situations or our relationship issues, to actually meet those in a relatively skillful way. And then the absolute side of things is what transcends the relative. It's this very profound shifting of perspective, this shifting of locus of where we are actually residing. And the tricky thing is that the relative and absolute often get confused in our lives and in our practice. You know, we get confused that we're maybe seeking some attainment. It could be something spiritual, or it could be something maybe in your career or a relationship or some activity. That there's this sense that once I get there, right, where I am isn't where I want to be, but when I get there, then I'll finally be happy. Then finally I can rest. Finally I will be fulfilled. And that's this confusing of the relative to the absolute. That the relative pleasures of life, the relative successes, aren't the absolute. They're not this transcending of this view, this very way of being in the world. And so sometimes we get those confused, or often we get those confused. And the same thing the other way. We can get so focused on the absolute that we forget to tend to what seems mundane, tending to our struggles in our life, our issues, attending to the struggles of the people around us, around the world, around our culture, our society. So relative and absolute, there's always this play of our lives and our practice. And these pictures as a whole speak to that. It's really embedded in that, this understanding of the relative approach and the absolute. And the pictures go back and forth in different levels of understanding. And the very last picture is this coming back into the world, but from this awakened perspective. Now, relative teachings, relative practice, sometimes is the most appropriate thing for us. I mean, sometimes when I go to practice, start doing my daily meditation, and my mind is just very distracted, I'm just very scattered, or maybe I'm obsessing over some issue. Trying to go into the absolute doesn't often work. I need to find some relative way of finding some ground. Okay, here's my feet actually touching the ground as I'm taking a step. Here's my breath moving through my body. Having some way to disengage from my enmeshment around my thinking process, my obsession around my thinking process. So this is the whole relative way of meeting our practice. Certainly when we're struggling with grief, with loss, with, you know, physical pain, all these things can have a very important relative way of approaching it around trauma. You know, all the things we talked about last year with the daily dharmas, they can all have their relative approach. And same thing with our relative happiness, that sometimes when we hear the teachings, especially if they're more absolutely focused toward the absolute, there's a sense of discounting the relative happiness that we enjoy as human beings. You know, the happiness of our things we our pursuits, our hobbies, our relationships. And we start to, you know, understand more clearly. Sometimes the Buddha would talk about what's the limitation. He didn't use these words, what's the limitation and what's the benefit of things, to see them very clearly. So we have, let's say, even something we really love to do. There's a point when that love is just, it's not tainted or not controlled by clinging. It doesn't have that sense of holding on to. There's not this agenda that it has to be a certain way, and I have to be a certain way in it. If it's there, if it's present, we're enjoying it. And when it's time for it to end, then it's an easy letting go. But so often, you know, these pursuits start to have this clinging component coming in. This clinging is, of course, this process of selfing, of creating identification around it. You know, like, this is what I am, and I will not be complete without it, that kind of sense. You know, this gets kind of tricky because there's a healthy aspect of that, of understanding of belonging, of connection, of understanding a healthy sense of self, healthy sense of ego. And there's a part where that becomes dysfunctional. And from a Buddhist perspective, there's a part where it starts to lead into suffering. So this, you know, there's not an easy, just do it this one way. It's like we have to really learn to meet ourselves and how we are each moment. Relative and absolute. So relative, not to be afraid of the relative pleasures or the relative enjoyments. Just notice when you start to shift into that, I don't want this to ever end. Like I shared that postcard or that greeting card around Christmas that it said, if you anticipate Christmas for half the year and reflect on it, remember it for the other half, it lasts the whole year long, right? But we're forgetting all these other moments of our lives throughout that year. So how do we meet this moment? This is really the koan. And as us as practitioners in daily life, practitioners in our full normal lives, is how do we integrate our practice in a way that, you know, brings that relativeness informed by our wisdom. And this leads into the quality of the absolute. Because sometimes something that seems like a very relative problem, you know, often interpersonal, you know, some identification that we're just really struggling with, we try to throw relative solution after relative solution at it. Until at some point, something shifts in us and we get a glimpse of an absolute way of relating to it, an absolute way that shifts from that narrow self-focus to what's beyond that, what's not of the self, not of that. And so this, you know, all this what I've been talking about, relative and absolute, how does that relate to this ox herding pictures and this first picture? Is that whole search, you know, that what are we searching for? Are we searching for something that's relative or for something absolute? And are we actually, you know, actually clear about which is which? And the absolute often, this series of pictures really points to this very deep place of practice, the deep sense of awakening. And I think it's helpful for us to reflect on why do we practice? You know, what brought me to practice initially? Why am I practicing today or this week? And why am I practicing for, you know, the long term? We may have an answer, different answer for each of those. You know, perhaps I came to practice because I wanted to somehow ease my suffering, ease my, quiet my mind, release my anxiety, to find some way of not being so carried away into worry thoughts. You know, maybe I wanted to find a way to relax my body and my mind, to be more present. And these are all beautiful relative reasons for practicing. And they have their own kind of version of these ox herding process, if you will, with those. And sometimes our practice is really pointing to, you know, what's the unknown, something that's beyond our normal circumstances or normal situations, coming to our deepest place of why do we practice. Sometimes we don't even realize that's what's working in the background, that there's some reason we keep practicing. But there's this heart's yearning that's often hard to articulate, hard to put into form. I shared this poem from Mary Oliver, When Death Comes. Because these deeper reasons of practice that these ox herding pictures are really designed to kind of elicit, you know, points to this quality of being fully alive. To be fully alive. So when death comes, like the hungry bear in autumn, when death comes and takes all the bright coins from his purse to buy me and snaps the purse shut. When death comes, like the measles pox, when death comes like an iceberg between the shoulder blades, I want to step through the door full of curiosity, wondering, what is it going to be like? That cottage of darkness. And therefore, I look upon everything as a brotherhood and a sisterhood. And I look upon time as no more than an idea, and I consider eternity as another possibility. I think of each life as a flower, as common as a field daisy and as singular, and each name a comfortable music in the mouth. Tending as all music does toward silence, and each day a body, each body a lion of courage, and something precious to the earth. When it's over, I want to say all my life I was a bride married to amazement. I was the bridegroom taking the world into my arms. When it's over, I don't want to wonder. If I've made of my life something particular and real, I don't want to find myself sighing and frightened or full of argument. I don't want to end up simply having visited this world. Mary Oliver. So she captures something in this poem of this, I think of a way, a version of the ox. This version of, you know, how can I really take the world into my arms? How can I be a bride married to amazement. And there's something that's the ox that this image is pointing toward. It's where is that state of amazement? And sometimes it's driven by this deep longing. Sometimes it's the fear of regret, of not wanting to have simply having visited this world. You know, both pull us and push us toward our practice. And this picture points to that we often come to this, you know, really the essence of that after exhausting all the other possibilities. And you know, we exhaust seeking happiness this way, seeking escape from pain this way. And we keep trying different strategies. And meditation gives us the tool to actually observe those failures, to actually see them clearly without distraction, without flinching, but to actually take those in. And so in this way, this first picture, this first verse and image really points toward this wisdom that comes from our own failures. You know, to realize, wow, I keep seeking happiness in ways that just do not pan out, that don't bring that quality of being a bride married to amazement, being the bridegroom taking the world into my arms. And we find things that partially work or almost work. We start to see that the actual way is very different. The actual essence is very different. And it asks something very profound of us to drop away. This first picture, the last verse, the last line is, I only hear the locusts chirping through the night. In contrast to all the struggle, all the searching, all the fruitless, you know, going this way, that way. And this is like that wisdom of failure, that wisdom of okay, that other way is not working, but there's this other sound, this other thing that's calling me. And what's so beautiful about these pictures is the next pictures we come into seeing that ox, starting to see the traces of the ox, and then we start to actually glimpse the ox. And then we start to use our old strategy of trying to conquer the ox, to try to control it, to try to make it ours. And part of that is perhaps needed, but even that at some point, there's another wisdom of that failure of that strategy. That strategy itself falls away. So you start to just get this sense of this rhythm of we try and try and then we finally release, and then we try and try and release again. And what we are asked to release is something very deep. I shared this poem also last week of Rumi, Quietness, which points to this deeper release. Quietness. Inside this new love, die. Your way begins on the other side. Become the sky. Take an axe to the prison wall. Escape. Walk out. Like somebody suddenly born into color. Do it now. You're covered with thick cloud. Slide out the side. Die and be quiet. Quietness is the surest sign that you've died. Your old life was a frantic running from silence. The speechless full moon comes out now. It takes us into the unknown. And when our surroundings, that sense of who are around, what we do, may be the same, but something is fundamentally has shifted and transformed within us. Something that's so ordinary, easily overlooked, that comes to the foreground. I only hear the locusts chirping through the forest at night. All right, let's just sit quietly for a few moments, and then I'll invite us into the discussion groups. All right, so we have some optional groups now. If you'd like to participate, you're welcome to. If you'd rather sit out, you're welcome to just meditate during this 20 minutes, or you can jump off a call and come back in and we'll try to see you and bring you in. But for those who like to engage with us, it's a beautiful process of learning to articulate your insights, to articulate your struggles, and to be witnessed in that, to be heard by your fellow group members, and to hear their own process, their own exploration. These groups are not a place to offer suggestions or advice, but really just to deeply witness and see each other, to really listen to each other, and to speak as fully from your own understanding as you can. Even if it's a very confused understanding, to say, I don't know what this is all about. That's the honesty. All right, so to do this, let me explain the topic. We'll use that same homework from last week. So there's two parts to this. One is to reflect on when you find yourself struggling, trying to seek some kind of happiness or some kind of escape. Ask, have you practiced asking, is this a question of the relative or the absolute? You know, am I trying to meet this struggle from a relative solution, or am I trying to shift into the absolute perspective? And, you know, understand that both of those may be appropriate and also inappropriate, depending on how we're holding it, how we're relating to it, and what the circumstance might be. So just reflect on that, relative versus absolute struggles. How do we meet those? The other question you may choose to answer is talking about what's the deepest reason for your practice. You know, what really brings your practice that really deep reason, and see if you can voice that if you like. All right, welcome back, everyone. Hope you had a good discussion, and I'm looking forward to hearing what you might have explored. And Tori and I want to experiment and see if people like to share any, you know, art or images or poetry that was inspired by this image. So let's start. I'm not sure if everyone has that, if nobody has that. So let's start with that, and then we'll weave questions in afterwards. So maybe the simplest way is if you could raise your hand and unmute, and then you can, you know, just briefly share your image. If you have anything or verse. All right, Cheryl.
Well, I have an image. I have something that I drew and I shared it in my group. So now I feel like I have to share since I have one. But I've been, after 4 weeks of looking at this image and, hello, Olivia. And just kind of getting into the absolute for me right now is metta and compassion. And so I drew this tree, metta watering the tree of compassion. Without metta, there is no compassion. So my job, I'll just leave it up for a second. I have like little words in here that say, reactivity, anger, delusion, greed. So it's all watering this tree of compassion, being an antidote to those things that are causing my life to be, causing me to be not free, mm-hmm. and causing me to have aversion in my relationship. And it feels so much better mm-hmm. to feel metta instead of aversion. So that's what I wanted to share.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Cheryl.
Welcome.
Anyone else like to share anything?
Olivia, what are you doing?
All right, Judith?
I do have something, but I have to share my screen, if that's okay.
All right, let me give you permission. To do that. So we'll just have that open for a brief time, and then I'll close that back up just for security pieces. But go ahead. You should have permission to do that. There you go.
Okay. So what I kept thinking of, because I take photos and I also write haiku. And what I kept thinking of this week was the image was mist, the mist that hides things, the mist that you get lost in. So there were two photos and two haiku that kind of found each other. And so anyway, the first one is actually, it's an old photo and it's an old haiku, but it just kept coming into my mind. So I put them together. So morning mist, how thin the veil between here and gone. And then the second one, I actually wrote the haiku this week. And the image is an older one. It's in the mountains of Montana, actually, from the train. And the haiku is, mist and sun, dawn tracker, starting out lost.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Judith. Those are very touching. Yeah, that's lovely to hear, to see those images of Cheryl and Judith and how they, just how the, your own understanding and expression of it. Anyone else like to share anything? All right, Randy. Okay, Randy, if you're speaking, you're still muted. There you are. I see you now. There you go.
Am I live now?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, I have, and I did this last Thursday too. This is kind of exciting for me to be able to go back. I write music, and frequently the music that I experience of my own music is that I write stuff and then later in life, maybe even, but certainly I grow into it, or it takes on essences as I get along in life, you know, and there was an original essence, but that's long gone, relatively speaking. So I'm just going to go through a couple of verses and a bit of the chorus and stop there. But I wrote this 20 years ago. It's hard to believe. And it's a reflection of that image, of image number one anyway, and how it's sort of is internally that I respond to it. Going through the valley, darkness all around, I got no idea where the light will be found. Weakened by confusion, what I did not learn, looking for direction, which way do I turn? Which way do I turn for peace, for power, for grace, for might, for magic, for mystery, for love, for light? Show me the way. I'm afraid now, so full of fear, denial, and resistance. I can't hear. Help me turn off my mind and get quiet and empty. Pull down the walls, feel wild and free. Close my eyes, stop the lies, clear my mind. Take my hand and lead me out. Show me out. Show me the way. There you have it.
Wonderful, Randy. That really speaks to this picture, doesn't it? Yeah, thank you so much for sharing your, yeah, just 20 years ago, it came out of you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how it evolves over time. That's showing how it came from a deep place. So thank you, Randy.
Yeah, mystery.
All right, Alma.
Hi. I wrote a poem for last Thursday's meeting at Capitol Hill, which I can read. It's a little bit long, hope not too long. So, response to Oxfording picture number one. All is in flux, nothing stable, drawn this way and that by fleeting impressions, shadow play on cave wall, attention constantly hijacked by phantoms of past and future, nothing to stand on. Confused, bewildered, even when knowing the imminent expiry date, seeking solace in ephemera, the last sweet taste of cocoa on the tongue, color draining from western sky as quickly as blood down the mortuary drain, the lingering imprint of a kiss, life itself. All seems lost, the languorous dream world of early childhood, ecstasy and oblivion of careless youth, the endless spendthrift days, even the fasting, study, meditation, devotions, all amulets against despair, the ceaseless trying. In blessed silence, faint memories arise of past loss, grief, not knowing, the urgent whisperings in the night, prompting utterance of the half-forgotten, our father, over and over and over like mantra, formulaic words empty of meaning. And yet, in time, it led to a resounding yes, to abandon the no longer bearable familiar landscape and to embrace life's unfolding mystery.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah, that's these expressions of these of these pictures. It's very powerful. Thank you. All right, anyone else? Okay, Suze.
I did something for our Sunday sit. I was looking at the picture as reflective of where, when answering the question of why do I practice and what pulls me one way or the other. And I don't know if people can see that, but I took the picture and the part where the Oxherder is looking back is the mind and maybe, the world.
Maybe back it up from the screen just a little bit.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
Yes.
So the part where the Oxherder is looking back was kind of the mind and the world and wanting everything to be certain and clear and figuring it all out, and it's all about me. And the part where his body is going forward felt more like my heart. And those circles were about curiosity and being and not knowing, being still. Let me see what the other okay to be scared, and just stopping and asking a lot of questions. So I identified with that going in two directions, and the looking back kind of over his shoulder felt like, well, what's the world say I should be doing? You know, and there's a lot of efforting and a lot about me, and that I needed to figure it all out. And the part that looking forward was way more trusting in that, in just the process. So that's what that first picture kind of stirred up in me.
Thank you so much, Suze. Yeah, the making this teaching our own. So it's a great way of integrating it and reflecting on it.
Thank you
so much. All right, anyone else like to share anything? All right, well, let's move into any questions or comments you might have. And if, you know, those of you have maybe you have something else to share, you just haven't had a chance, you can do that. You can raise your hand also. So we have about, 15 more minutes to explore any more around this, our last chance to completely understand this first image, at least for this go around. All right, Matt.
Yeah, hey, Tim. So when I was reflecting on the relative and absolute this week, something that kind of came to mind for me was thinking about relative and absolute in relation to like the teachings themselves and how, you know, there's some absolute stuff in them about like, you know, source of suffering and noble truths and all that kind of stuff. But how the context that they were, you know, first uncovered in the Buddha and whatnot are relative. And I was thinking about that in terms of, you know, like it's very like patriarchal society and, you know, the world was a different place, but like the absolutes are the same, but some of like the context is a little different. And like something I've, you know, throughout my life reflecting on religion, it's like, how important is that context? And is it okay to kind of extract these absolute truths out and apply them in your new relative world? I was just curious, like, I don't know if you had any thoughts on that. And yeah, it's like, there's kind of like this permanence and impermanence, I guess, to the Dharma around the relative and absolute that I was thinking about.
Sure. Yeah. So what comes to mind around that is, you know, I think if we really have a taste or a strong, the sense of the absolute, when that's really manifesting itself, is really being revealed, it has this interesting capacity of being able to hold the relative in all its diversity and all its unique circumstances. While the reverse isn't true, that the relative can't hold those absolutes. The relative sees all of the paradoxes of the absolute. It sees how they don't fit. You know, there's a relative, one religion's relative reality, you know, doesn't fit another. It can be this conflict between those. And so that's kind of that big shift that goes beyond thoughts, beyond ideas, beyond really that internal sense of isolated self. And that's, and the paradox is that then that can hold all these small things, all these, I mean, not even so much small things, just the big things of life that are the unique relative manifestations can easily be held and met. And, you know, and yet, you know, we sometimes it's like we don't know the solution. We don't know what to do with these relative problems. But the absolute brings a certain level of, I don't know, grace or ability to flow with it, to adapt to it. And even if it's just simply, so I don't know what to do here in this situation. Yeah, so hopefully that helps. Thank you, Matt. Anyone else like to ask or share anything? All right, it looks like that might be, oh, there you go. So Jim and Carol.
Okay. I like children's books, children's picture books. And this is a book called Kitten's First Full Moon. And it was Kitten's first full moon. When she saw it, she thought there's a little bowl of milk in the sky, and she wanted it. So she closed her eyes and she stretched her neck and opened her mouth and licked. The kitten only ended up with a bug at her tongue. Poor kitten. Still, there was a little bowl of milk just waiting. So she pulled herself together, wriggled her bottom, and sprang from the top of the porch. But kitten only tumbled, bumping her nose and banging her ear and pinching her tail. Poor kitten. But still, there was a little bowl of milk just waiting. So she was searching for this milk. So she chased it down the sidewalk, through the garden, and so forth. But she still couldn't reach it. She couldn't reach this bowl of milk. Still, it was there waiting. And then she climbed the tallest tree, and she got scared. But she couldn't reach the milk. Then in the pond, the kitten saw another bowl of milk. It was bigger. What a night. The reflection of the moon, of course. And so she ran down the tree and leaped and got wet and sad and tired and hungry, just like the man on the searching for his ox. So she went back home. And there was a great big bowl of milk on the porch. Just waiting for her. Lucky kitten. So that sort of seems to me the search and for something that wasn't really there, and then finding it right in front of your front porch. So
wonderful, thank you. That yeah, that just fits perfectly with these 10 pictures. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, the author is Kevin Hinks. And his work, I think, has a real dharmic flavor, a lot of it.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, it sounds like it. Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah,
you're welcome.
They can children's books can capture such a clarity.
Yeah. Well, thank you all for listening.
Of course. All right, anyone
else? Tim, I have a question.
Yes, go ahead.
That was really great, Carol, by the way. Like the best Sangha togetherness I've had. It's so fun. Can you talk a little bit about is it the locust? Have we talked about it?
Like the symbolism? The locust chirping, yes.
Yeah. The symbolism.
Yeah, the way I hold that, it's kind of the exhaustion of all other possibilities. And yet that essence of that spiritual path, that essence of your inner true nature is kind of coming in this way that is like the picture. Actually, I only hear the locus, like that's not even what I'm looking for. And yet that's kind of that's leading us into the next picture, which is really starting to see the traces of the ox. So it's like this first hint of something it's really resonating with us in a deeper way that we don't even realize. We're still kind of in this struggling, going this way and that way, and yet there's something there's this sound that's pulling us into the next, to see, you know, trying to be more connected to the actual, seeing the ox, starting to work with the ox, to actually glimpse the ox.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I think that's kind of the, like, very key line. Only hear the locusts chirping through the forest at night. And what the locusts represent, I mean, that, you know, again, that's, you know, just represent true, you know, nature and expression of nature, nature calling us in, calling us back home. But yeah, sit with that. See what comes up for your own exploration. All right, great. Any other comments, questions, or sharing? All right, good. So next week, Tuareg Salah will take over the Monday night teaching, and she will be going to the next picture, seeing the traces of the ox, I believe. So we'll have a similar format of holding the image throughout the month and some sharing at the end, and I think it'll be a fruitful exploration. And I'll be back here in April going on to the next picture. And then we'll be still meeting online only next month, and then April we'll be coming back to a hybrid, so both online and also in person at the university district, what's called University Friends, UFM. All right, and thank you for your continued support of SIMS, and you know, most of all for your continuing engagement with the Dharma and your own exploration of that.